Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I am Margaret Katz-Kann, and this is my partner.
Hey, Margaret, it's David Langiuli, your intrepid ski buddy and warrior in Naples, Florida. And we are joined by a wonderful guest, John Torgett, who is the Associate Vice President at Virginia Tech in the Advancement Organization. And John and I have known each other for several years from the fundraising world. And John recently went through a significant transition and change that he wrote about for us on the Fundraising Leadership blog site. And so we're going to talk to him about what this was like for him. So welcome, John.
Thank you. Very happy to be here today.
Great. Yeah.
Great. The first question that I had from reading your blog, and I think this is such an important part of transition, was, you know, you talked about kind of needing to grieve and have completion with what you had done before your transition. You know, there was a transitioning from before you got the chance to transition to. And I'm just curious, like, what was that like for you? What helped you to be intentional?
Several things, but I think the grieving was started by the surprise. So I'd realized probably in the moment that the beginning of the transition was happening, which was a direct conversation with my supervisor and the vice president for advancement, that I didn't know exactly why I was feeling so caught off guard and uncomfortable, but I took in the information about this new assignment that I was going to be embarking upon and just took it all in. And at the end of that conversation, asked if I could sleep on it. And good news was that was exactly what he intended for me to do. The conversation was a day before we were having a management retreat. And so it was important for my supervisor and someone I'm really close with to give me time to manage my emotions and think through how I was going to show up the next day. And I guess that was part one of it. And part two, that was a Thursday going into a Friday. And on the other side of the weekend, after getting a chance to decompress and work it through with my family, I'm very lucky to be close with the head of our HR for our area. And we went on several laps around several buildings. And, you know, just the idea about having a meeting while exercising or walking, I'm not typically been one to do that, but I needed it this time. And I needed someone that could talk me off the ledge a little bit and just help me, even several days later, even though I dealt with it in the moment, in the time, understand it from the head of the group's perspective. You know, here was someone that is leading a high performance organization who's looked to a member of his team to take on a new challenge. And so it really took seeing it from another perspective to just begin to deal with it. And it was partially because I really had some great success leading up to it, that it was why me, why now, why this, kind of just all those questions that right. start to trip you up. And it's so lucky to have such a great leader for us here that I work with too, because part of how he helped was saying, think about how to let yourself deal with the situation so that others around you don't see that inner turmoil, and it will give you better purchase as you take on this new role. So the coaching of my direct supervisor, the way he introduced the information to me, and having someone that was not in line, if you will, you know, in this particular case, it was the HR head for our team, but it could have been anybody that I trusted that I could have had that conversation with that was sort of off the record not holding me accountable to my feelings, and how to reorient myself to begin to work with the team. It was also, we had several weeks before I was going to be introducing this change to the team that I was going to be taking on. And that made all the difference in the world as well.
Yeah. So there's several pieces there that I want to point toward, and I'm sure Margaret will pick up on it a little bit, is that the first thing is the awareness that both you and the vice president had about the disorientation that this was going to cause. In other words, it was disorienting, especially for you, John, because it just came on you. And you've been there for 5 years, leading a productive and effective team, doing great work. And then all of a sudden, it's like, what? Right? And Margaret and I, in the coaching realm, professional coaching realm, where we work with clients, we call this kind of processing your emotions, which you use, I think you use that word, process. And so I'm glad that, and you're also a very thoughtful person. I know you to be a very thoughtful person, John. And there is sort of the rational analytical part of this, the thinking it through. And then there's the emotional part of it, which is what you wrote about in the article and what the book Transitions is all about, which is how do I, as a human being, process these emotions. Did you want to add anything to that, Margaret?
No, I guess, oh no, maybe, yes. Just an acknowledgement, because I think that experience speaks to so many people when you're in somebody's office and this, you know, it wasn't a bomb in a violent way, but it was a very disorienting event got dropped on you. And you were aware enough to know, like, does not compute, does not, right? Like you kind of knew that it was going to take time to process, and you gave yourself permission to do that, you know, rather than trying to jump in and make everything be all tidy.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just add one piece, because it helped me in the long run, but it was risk at the time of that first conversation to press on one element of my work in the years prior that was in particular most proud for me as a leader, that was being removed as part of this process of taking on a new role. Mm. And I did ask the question, are you doing that with intent? And we forced that back and forth right at that moment. And I think that was actually part of the grief of the loss, was there was a small sliver in there that was also about the repositioning of some of what I was doing to another part of my leadership colleague group, that was a learning moment for me in terms of, I need you to do this new role. You will be successful. We will be successful. And one of your other colleagues is going to successfully take on the next phase of some of what you are doing. And that was also good for me in the long run, but took some processing of, I was doing amazing, but it wasn't, there was things that could be done better. And so the reorienting of the organization, this was a major piece of the change that was happening, but it was actually multiple pieces that the vice president was repositioning. And, you know, I think I read or wrote in the blog, in the long run, we are truly better off for all this change that's happened. I led a big piece of it, but it wasn't just about me. It was also about the performance of a leadership team and associating the right work with the right leader at the right time.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm aware that in what you're pointing to is that in change, there's some things that you really enjoy or are proud of doing that you're no longer, that's part of the loss. You no longer get to do those things. It's good that you name that. So that's another sort of of brilliant part of the conversation that you brought to the forefront with your VP and shows your emotional awareness is just that you were able to, in the moment, name that piece of your job that was really valuable to you and to acknowledge that. Yeah. So that's, I think, part of, you know, in this three-step transition process that you outlined in the article, you really have captured, you know, that first phase, which is just to be aware, I am going through a loss right now. Like, this is hard for me. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd encourage, and I hadn't thought about this till right now, that, you know, sometimes we get to initiate the change that leads to a transition. And I've done plenty of that as well. And this whole feedback loop that we're having a conversation about, I think is going to make me more intentional the next time I'm in that spot where I'm initiating the change rather than being the receiver of that change initiation.
Yeah. So let's talk about this middle. I don't know if you called it in the article. I read Jeff, the Bridges book, the first one he published called Transitions. You mentioned a different book that you referenced, which came after, but he talks about this, I call it a no man's land. Margaret has another word for it that I love. What's your word, Margaret? Do you remember?
I'm going to blurt it out once I have a better idea of what you're talking about. Keep talking. I'll get
it's
there.
It's the, you call it the liminal space.
Oh, the liminal space. Yes, liminal. I have called it that. Yeah.
That was like a new vocabulary word for me when we were talking.
I love it. And it's the neutral zone in the managing transitions.
Oh, yeah. Neutral zone. That's what he calls it. Neutral zone. I call it the no man's land. You're like, you're out.
Right.
You're not on one. You're not in the loss phase, you're not in the new beginning. You're just.
Yeah. There's another way that I think about that. It's like, you're still falling in that trust fall, you know, still hoping that arms are going to come out and catch you.
Yeah. Or I think I use the image of two trapeze artists on your blog. Like, it's when you're flying through the air, the greatest of ease. Except it's not easy. So what was it like for you and your team? Because I guess when you were in this liminal space, this neutral zone, and your team and perhaps new members of your team, this was all very uncomfortable. So what was that like?
So the first part was critical. The beginning of the conversation we just had, what happened in middle December 2019, and the introduction of all these changes, including this new engagement organization I was going to be leading, stood up in mid-January. And so we had an opportunity as a leadership group to role play how the announcement was going to roll out to our entire division and to our alumni, because it had a implication to the constituent that we are facing with or engaging with to secure amazing philanthropy to move Virginia Tech forward. So it affected board level roles, it affected internal relationships. And so there was a whole architected approach to then launching it with the team. And I guess the beginning of the neutral zone then was this moment where the team leaders that make up engagement weren't as surprised and were less disappointed than me. In fact, many of them were excited that I was going to be their team leader. And in fact, one of them even said, you were the only one that could have taken this role. And, you know, for the beginning of the neutral zone, that was powerful for me to be feeling acknowledged and in a safe place with the people I was going to lead the transition through and with. And so I guess that gave power to this idea of, let's start by focusing on the work and the idea about what's the one most important thing. And I just think this is a powerful concept, just generally speaking, in a world that's upside down all the time, every week right now. What's that what's that objective you can stay focused on? It's your guiding light. It's the most important work objective. And that ultimately led us to a concept that I'll pause on here that the Bridges book talks about in the neutral zone, about blending the old and the new. I got there later, but I'd say the start of the neutral zone was setting a nearer term point of view that was also enabled by the natural budget cycle of a year. So this was happening in January. We were looking towards certain things being done by the end of the academic year, May 1st. And that allowed us to set this 90-day window to try and make progress through the neutral zone to allow for that ambiguity to create conversation. So this purposeful structuring of time to listen and time to take feedback and time to understand how others were dealing with the change, because I didn't trust that they were all happy. I mean, they said they were, but you have to accept that and feel good that that's the reaction, but then go deeper and allow people then to individually have conversations and share what's on their mind.
Yeah, I'm really thinking as you're describing your timeline that this was right at the beginning of COVID, right? As you were launching into that. So yeah, share a little bit. What did you learn from that experience going remote, I'm imagining?
On top of everything else.
Right. Talk about some liminal space, right?
Yeah. On top of everything else, you've got a new job, a new team, and everything else is moving at the same time.
Right. Nobody's coming to work anymore.
Right.
I guess it maybe unlike what happened to other work groups, other teams, other organizations, it created a unified sense of loss. So the work of advancement, philanthropic engagement to secure resources involves human interaction at its core. And so, you know, much has been written about this in our work over the last year, but right at the beginning of it, the team that I took on had a big role in how our alumni come together. And so we were canceling everything. And so here we were trying to spin up focused, objective work. And we had to deal with the fact that there was this whole sense of loss about canceling everything. And I know the world went through it. I mean, we all canceled everything. But I do think that there was, in the end, it helped us because we got just far enough, right? We'd had about 6 weeks of work together and we'd begin to structure how we would engage one-on-one, how we would engage in small groups, how we would engage in bigger groups to do our work. And I think it, you know, after everyone sort of started dealing with the canceling of everything through March, it may have started us to see the light at the end of the tunnel that would come months later, but it unified not resilience, but adaptability. And I wrote about that intentionally in the blog because we had that conversation as a group. Everyone was talking about resilience at that time in management dialogue and in business. And we had a conversation that said, resilience is important, but adaptability is where we need to be. And that allowed us to find how to shift into another way to accomplish the objectives. We didn't give up on the objectives. We adapted to that change to find out how we could still rename and rebrand and reprogram how we engage with our older alumni. We couldn't just say, COVID, we can't do that. So.
Well, you're in some senses, the pandemic was a facilitator, accelerator for this transition, because in the Bridges model and in some of our work that Margaret and I do, there is a shedding, or there is a letting go in that first phase. And then before you can even be in transition or be in this neutral zone, you have to take off your backpack. You have to let go of how you used to do things. And in some senses, I'm hearing that the pandemic helped you with the shedding process, because this transition period, Bridges talks about this, can take much longer than 3 months for many people and organizations. And so in some senses, I think it was an accelerant for you. But also, I wanted to point out a phrase that Margaret and I use a lot, which is called being present, open, and flexible. So it sounds like you were sort of aware of the need to be that way during this liminal time and space. Being versus present, just be present and be open to all the change that you're going through, and then be flexible. So how did that prepare you for the next phase?
I'm pausing because I think we've all felt through this entire 15-month process that started, beginning of March last year, it's like compression. Everything's been compressed in some ways. And so how we prepared for the next phase was really about purpose. So, and I say that, but what is the purpose of engaging a constituency or a group of potential donors, and what's our role in our work, and how do we organize that? So I think those questions that I think from a leadership team before the transition, so kind of in that December, January timeframe, we'd spent some time as a leadership group really talking about. And so to kind of bridge through that and accelerate how we move to the other side of the neutral zone, we found a way to tie the value of the work that we were achieving in this new model to being proud of the purpose of the work we were doing. So I guess back to your point about being present, I had to be present to be able to see if individuals were beginning to see the purpose of the work that we were structuring, so they could be proud of the new work and let go of their feeling of, well, wait, you're telling me to do something different than what I did before. And I think getting to that other side of where are you going and what are those objectives and how does the new work translate, which then allowed us to blend the old and the new. This concept of in higher education advancement, young alumni, those new graduates, has been something that large higher education advancement teams have focused on. Depending on where you've worked, some have been better than others at engaging older alumni. And so interestingly, you mentioned our connection by way of your work at Princeton. Princeton's one of those institutions that has done this really well. And interestingly, they had an old guard and still do have an old guard to how they engage. And so we had to be like, well, what do other universities do and why do they do it? And how do we do it differently? Because we can't just copy, and have those conversations about how do you have that pride moment for somebody else of a 70-year-old and a 20-year-old linking arms and seeing the common good that they're doing. So it was exciting because there was real purpose in the work that we were doing. So being present and allowing those conversations to happen, I think allowed us to then start to bridge to the other side.
Yeah. John, it sounds like you just have so much to offer about the pause and all of the ways that you sort of were thoughtful and articulate about this transition. And we like to leave something with our listeners about what, after this whole amazing process, what would you leave our listeners with? Something that they can hold on to or try?
I'd say in the moment, be positive as much as you possibly can. And I, you know, this is one where I think work and life blend together so much. And it's why I referenced Teddy Roosevelt and his intentional, purpose-driven way in which he approached life and leadership together, which was about this concept of a rigorous, kind of a rigorous life. And so how to be positive in the moment is how to be one with the world, because you can't be one with yourself and be there for your team if you can't find something to be joyful about every day. And I think being positive as a leader, you have to draw on the energy of how you're able to connect with life, your family, and then your work. And so, you know, I ended the blog post with the celebration that we were able to have. And I was so, I'd forgotten this part about the Bridges transition model, but he talks about how that last stage is about celebration and being able to, you know, have awareness about you're now positioned for the future. And I think as a leader, you need to do everything you can every day to put yourself in a positive space so you can be there for your team.
Yeah. What I hear you saying too, John, it doesn't have to be just what's happening on the team or at work, that the whole world is fair ground to look for something positive.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. John, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. We so appreciate it.
I'm happy to do it.
Great. This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you are enjoying our show, please rate and review us so others can find us. Now, go put it into practice.